You're listening to 808s and Ankle Breaks on Amherst Wired. Check out other podcasts like The Polygonal Sunrise and The Zoo Report right here on the network. For more content, go to amherstwired.com. The student-run magazine has a variety of articles in both campus news and entertainment.
Kevin Hart, Adam Levine, Shawn Mendes, Charlie Puth, Sia, Lil Jon, what? What's good, everybody? Welcome to 808s and Ankle Breaks, episode 43. It's the hip-hop and basketball-based podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Jonathan Kerma. You know me. You know me, but I'm going to still tell you my titles and flex anyways. Amherst Wire Entertainment and Podcast Editor. And with me is our other host,
Trevor Wilson, Assistant Entertainment Editor for the Amherst Wire, a.k.a. the Independent Variable. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen.
Yo, Lil Dicky's about to fight you. Yeah.
I forgot he did that.
Yes.
That's why it sounded familiar. Okay.
Yo, not to butt in, but Lil Dicky's about to drop a pretty crazy track tomorrow.
We are not talking about Lil Dicky.
You know what I gotta say about that?
Edited the fuck out.
I guess that's what I gotta say about Lil Dicky. I'll stay sleeping.
So we have a good episode coming for you today, folks.
Good.
We actually have, for our Artist of the Week this week, we don't just have a song for you. We have an interview for you.
Bang.
Amherst, both a UMass student and an Amherst local artist, Walt Arcane. We'll be talking with him. We'll also be having Slapper Skip, per usual, you know, the hottest singles of the week. And later in the show, we'll be talking about Anderson .Paak's newest album,
Ventura.
And we will also be talking the NBA playoffs, and then we'll be out of your ears.
Yeah, yeah.
So you know what time it is. It's Slapper Skip time. If you don't know what Slapper Skip is, it's our weekly segment where we talk about the hottest singles of the week. If we like it, it's a slap. If we don't like it so much, it's a skip. If it's in between, it's a mess. Let's do it, Trevor.
Let's do it.
First on the list, No Name, song 32. What'd you think of this one, Trevor?
I'm going to give this a slap. It took a little time to grow on me, but I love that No Name sounds like better than ever on this. I think her voice is much more clear than it ever is, because sometimes she comes off a little bit quiet, but a lot of great flow, great memorable lyrics on this thing, smooth beat, ambient pads with these light organs in the background too. You know, drums just make your head nod. You're listening to her the whole time, and she's got a lot to say. But yeah, it's a dope track. I'm giving it a slap.
Yeah, I'm going to also give this a slap. I don't think there's anything necessarily new from No Name on this track, but I think No Name has started to figure out what makes No Name so special, her ability to both reflect on self and America at the same time. And in this track, I think she does it probably better than she's done in her past, which is kind of crazy because, you know, she has so many good songs where she does this. But this track, you know, she has a lot of different references to, you know, things in America. I think there's a lot of talk about materialism on here and just a lot of other themes in it. So it's a slap for me. Next, we got Schoolboy Q featuring Travis Scott, Chopsticks. What do you think of this one, Trevor?
Ooh, this is a skip for me. Pretty bad Travis hook. He probably took like 2 minutes with this one. But nothing really stands out from Schoolboy either. Generic lyrics, generic beat, just nothing really new or refreshing from him. So I hope he changes that when the album comes around, but it's a skip.
Yeah, I'm going to give this a meh. I agree that the beat is generic, but it's still got like this like kind of slowed down, moody trap vibe that just, I guess it works, I think, to a certain extent. I think Travis Scott is kind of turning into The Weeknd, where his features are kind of like, it's like if we put his name on it and just have
it'll
him
get plays.
Sing, if we have him sing literally anything, it becomes a hook. Like, I remember The Weeknd, he featured on someone's album and he had a song called Unfazed, and he just kept singing about how he's unfazed. Yeah, Travis Scott on this is, the song is called Chopsticks, and literally all Travis
That's
says,
all he says
is Chopsticks.
Chop,
which,
chop.
which it took me a while to kind of fully understand what Chopsticks means, but clearly, in terms of the context from Schoolboy Q's verse, Chopsticks are referring to, you know, women's legs, I guess. Which I guess, you know, chopsticks are long, legs are long. I get it, but, you know, it's not the most impressive subject matter. So for that reason, I'm going to give it a meh. Next, we got Tyga.
Woo.
God damn. What'd you think of this one, Trevor?
I'll hit this with a meh. You know, as always, Tyga's got the club vibes for you. Nice little guitar melody, mixes it with a couple strings in here, some light vocals in the background too. Nice to hear something less like Taste. I think he kind of steers away a little bit from that, but, you know, it's still pretty trademark from
I'd
him.
I'd say for the beat yeah, definitely changes.
Absolutely. But it's still, like, pretty trademark, pretty standard from him. Nothing new, but it's a bop.
Yeah, I'm going to give this a meh, and as pretty much everything said, everything Trevor said is on point there. You know, it's Tyga at this point. He showed that he's not a chameleon. He's not going to try and surprise you. Tyga's going to give you the same club song every time. He's going to rap about, you know, directions to women. He loves doing that, like, you know, telling them they can get a taste. What was the last one? The last one was about getting a taste too low-key. But this one, it's more just, it's still just commanding women to dance, pretty much. That's what I got from this.
Club
which,
anthems,
yeah, he's low-key trying to just be a strip club king. That seems to be his only goal with music. Yeah. And, I mean, if that's what he's going for, he's succeeding. They're at least bangers, I'll say that. But next we got Smoke Perp, Remember Me. What did you think of this one, Trevor?
See, you got a smirk on your face. I'm gonna hit this with a slap.
A smirk?
I'm
me?
Hitting this with a slap.
All right.
Maybe I haven't listened to enough Smoke Perp, but I really like this track. It sounds a lot different from his other stuff. He sings on it. You're like, yo, what is going on here? Smoke Perp is singing on the track right now. I think he bites Sway Lee a little bit.
Yeah, that's where I was waiting. I was going there.
Yeah, but I really enjoyed it. I think the hi-hats had a really nice bounce to it, too. But it's just really, it's really refreshing to hear from him. And I overall enjoyed it, so I'll give it a slap.
See, I like when we disagree on songs.
Are
that's
you
why
skipping this?
That's why I started laughing. I think I'm going to give this a super skip.
Wow.
Just because Smoke Perp.
I'm shocked.
I think he's just been on the decline for, like, really a year now, ever since he dropped the tape with Metro Boomin. It's just been kind of downhill since. And with this track, it's literally, like, just a Sway Lee impersonation.
Yeah.
Like, you said it, you mentioned it, but for me, like, that's all I can think about when I listen. It just sounds like a Sway Lee impersonation from someone that doesn't have as special a voice as Sway Lee. And it's funny because the song is called Remember Me, and it's just, like, for me, it's not memorable. And for that reason, I'm giving it a super skip just for its unoriginality. I feel like he's kind of just, I think Smoke Perp at this point is trying to find what sound he needs to keep going. And it definitely,
he's trying to stay refreshing.
I will give him credit. As you said, it's definitely something different from Smoke Perp. I've heard him, you know, auto-tune croon before, but it didn't sound like this. But for me, it just wasn't an interesting enough track for me to ignore the fact that he literally ripped off Sway Lee.
Yeah.
next we got 070 Shake, Nice to Have. What did you think of this one, Trevor?
I'll hit this with a meh. Really cool beat on this one. It's got a really strong bass line, some bouncy mechanical-like drums on it, too. I really like the build-up in the bridge, too. But the only thing I don't like is that I feel like it's a little unstructured. I feel like there's not really a direction with this song, and I feel like she tries to cram in a lot in here. So it's a little too much for me, but it's not a bad track by any means, so I'll give it a meh.
Yeah, I'm going to give this a slap. But I will say, I guess with an asterisk, because I also feel like this song isn't structured well, and I feel like the lyrics also aren't as really, the time wasn't put into it, so I guess the details of this song aren't there, but the whole vibe and aura it gives off is, you can't argue with it. It's got this just blissful feel to it. It seems to be like a love song, but I just think overall, the vibe really carries this, but 070 Shake definitely should probably just do a little more focus on the lyrics and the focus, because it's like, I think lyrically it doesn't necessarily stand out for a love song.
Not at all.
It doesn't seem like it has that focus to make it feel like 070 Shake's love song, and I can be like, oh, this tells me about 070 Shake and her personality. It's kind of just like
a little
generic.
Yeah.
So I said slap, but it's kind of like in between a man and a slap for me. It's definitely got a great vibe to it though. It's like pop R&B, but it's got, you know, some trap instrumentation on it. But yeah, next we got Power is Power, SZA, The Weeknd, and Travis Scott. I haven't heard this one, Trevor.
This is off the Game of Thrones inspired album.
Okay.
If you don't know. So that's why I put this on here.
Okay.
I'm a big Game of Thrones guy. But regardless, I'm skipping it. The Weeknd opens with something pretty generic. Sounds like he would rip it right off of Starboy. It's got that same like futuristic pop sound. Just nothing new from him. SZA sounds great though. I'm glad that she's back and making music, because I feel like we haven't heard from her in a long time. Travis sounds really quiet on this. Vocals aren't that great. He doesn't really give you a whole lot to work with. The instrumental's really interesting. Very electronic. Like I said, kind of this like blend of pop and electronic. But for me, it's just not enough to keep coming back to, so I'm gonna have to skip it.
I respect that.
Yeah.
And that's going to conclude our slapper skip. Now it's time for our artist of the week. We sat down with Walt Arcane. Before that comes on, we'll just play a quick track from him, Mad featuring Chris Focus. Here you go, guys.
We got this food on the plate, all the haters are mad. Whoa, don't like to brag. Yeah, pockets will sag. You should be careful, no white on my flag. No, it be fucked to the price on the tag. Whoa, won't see me wearing no rags. Yeah, we be after a bag. Skirting a limb or I dip in a jag. All your shit only derivative. Flowing so primitive. I never lose momentum, never pivoted. Why is the come up inhibited? We cannot ever be limited. Music got everyone riveted. Flow the coldest, that's definitive. Yeah, we be moving this shit, that's prohibited. Cause you know that shit's solicited. We're too committed, the flow is exhibited. It's a process to progress. We don't stress and don't rest or regress. Yeah, we got the headies in excess, nothing less we ingest. So many issues that I gotta protest, assess, address. It takes finesse to possess and retain success. So I guess that you must invest to make all of your thoughts manifest and coalesce, but I digress.
And we're back. We got a special guest today. We got Amherst, rapper, producer, and mixer, audio engineer.
He does it all.
Got the endless labels. Amherst artist, Walt Arcane. How you doing today?
Good. How are you guys?
We're good.
Great.
We're good.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So let's just kind of get right into the interview, if you don't mind.
Sure.
So you recently dropped an EP titled Incentives, and in it you mentioned being both a UMass Amherst student and being from Amherst. So first things first, I got to ask, what is the Amherst music scene like?
Facts. Yeah, there's definitely a music scene around here. I know it's not really focused on hip-hop all the time. It's a lot of bands and, like, reggae and, like, indie-type stuff a lot of the time. I know Northampton and, like, Greenfield has a lot of good music. And there's a lot of good music in Amherst as well, but it's not always focused on hip-hop. That's why there aren't, like, a ton of hip-hop artists, or, like, it's kind of hard to make it out of this area. But there's a growing scene, definitely, over the past, like, 5-10 years. And right. There's a lot more artists now, for sure. Right.
And how did you get into hip-hop, seeing that, you know, there isn't much of a hip-hop scene around here?
Yeah, I actually got into hip-hop back in, like, it was probably, like, early middle school, late elementary school. My friend Chris, who goes by Chris Focus, he's also a rapper, he introduced me to, it was, like, Eminem and Lil Wayne, who were, like, popping at the time.
Yeah.
They were, like, really famous in the late 2000s. I really liked Rebirth by Lil Wayne and Drop the World with Eminem.
Oh, man, Drop the World. That's what I'm talking about.
Like, I don't know. I loved the collaborations they did because they were so good and so popular at the time. And so I liked No Love on Recovery as well. Mm-hmm. I like Recovery a lot. And then I also really the Carter IV when he dropped that.
Oh, yeah,
that was like I was in like 8th grade, and I bumped like every single song on that album.
So I bet you were probably psyched when the Carter 5 came out last year.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I really like that.
Same.
That was an event.
So would you say Eminem and Lil Wayne are your influencers then?
Definitely two of the main ones, yeah. I mean, obviously being like a white hip-hop artist, Eminem, he might not be like my favorite all time, but like he definitely inspires me.
Yeah.
And his lyrical talent is just off the charts. And yeah.
Yeah.
They're definitely two of my biggest influences.
So that's about rapping. What about on the flip side of that? Because we know you produce too. Do you have any guys in mind like that?
Yeah, definitely. So one guy who's recently become famous, his name is Russ. And he's sort of like me. He's like a do-it-yourself guy. He mixes everything. He produces everything. He engineers everything. He masters everything. And he like really like explicitly says that in his songs, like, this is all my stuff. Like, he's not with a record label, he like is self-made, and that's sort of like what the path I'm on is. So I definitely vibe with that. And also when it comes to producing, I'm big into like trap producing. I've been moving into other areas, but I like, you know, like the classic, like Metro Boomin, like London on the Tracks. I really like TM88 a lot.
Some big names on that list.
For sure. So now we can kind of talk about you and your sound. What would you say sets you apart from other rappers and producers? What makes Walt Arcane Walt Arcane?
Yeah, I feel you. I definitely try to have more of a lyrical style. I'm not with that, like, mumble rap, like, stuff that's coming out a lot. I definitely try to be more lyrical and more meaningful with my lyrics. And I also try to, as you could hear in my last song of my EP, Concerto, I sampled a Mozart song. So I try to pull from like older classical styles as well. I have another track with heavy violins on it, all the same as the first track. And then, yeah, I also try to be just really lyrical and not like, and have like meaning to my lyrics, so it's not just like random trap stuff.
Right. Do you think you could give like an example of, you know, a song where you put some deeper meaning into it?
Yeah, definitely All the Same on the EP. And
that's the one with Sam K on it, right?
In My Way is the one with Sam K. Okay. That's the one I was going to next, because that one also has some good meaning to it. But yeah, some of the lyrics in All the Same are definitely, it talks about how like I don't want to be like the same as all these other rappers coming out. And like sort of what I'd have to pull up the lyrics, but it's like I'm on this path and like so many people are trying to do this path. Mm-hmm. And so I have to like find my own avenue and find my way to do this with all these people telling me like, oh, you can't do it, you can't do it. But you still got to like try and persevere.
Right. Wow. And when did you start making music?
I started making music back in, probably back in like early middle school. I was not good. Let me tell you something.
I don't think anyone's good when they start in middle school.
Yeah, definitely not.
Yeah. And the thing is, the funny thing is like a lot of people when they start rapping, they'll like get beats off YouTube or whatever, but I was producing as well. I was beginning my producing, so the beats were bad and the rapping was bad, so it was just all around bad. Yeah. And I released a project in high school that was just like awful compared to what I do now.
Yeah, but I mean, I think you have to go through those steps to get to where you are today.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? I think there's this book by Malcolm Gladwell called
Outliers.
Outliers. And one of the things it's about, you know, having 10,000 hours to really get to that level of mastery.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. So you needed those hours. So you clocked in early, pretty much. That's the way to
look. I wish I had been, because I've heard that before. I wish I had been counting my hours because I have no idea how many I'm at right now.
Yeah. And do you produce and audio engineer for other artists?
Yeah, definitely. I've been recording at Northfire Recording Studio recently. It's a local recording studio in Amherst. And I've been getting a bunch of clients there. And I'll work with a bunch of local rappers, some from farther away, like Springfield or Connecticut. And I produce for artists as well, but it's mostly the engineering and mixing for artists that I'll do.
Do you have any, you know, I'm not trying to make you name drop, but like, do you have some other artists that you can name that you've worked with?
Yeah. Well, I work a lot with my best friend who like has come up with me, and we've been friends since like fourth grade. And so he's a rapper and I'm like the producer. I also rap, but he's like really good at rapping. So I'll produce for him. Mm-hmm. His name's Chris Focus. I was mentioning him before. There's another local guy, his name's Warren the Alchemist.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I produced a project for him. It was called Hybrid. Engineering-wise, I've been engineering for this guy named Von Suave, who's down in Springfield. I actually do stuff that's not music as well. Like, I've been engineering a podcast, just doing the sound for that, mm-hmm. Northfire. I actually did sound for a movie as well.
Wow.
Okay. There's this guy who was doing, like, a senior project, and he was doing a short film. And so we did all the movie narration in Northfire. And then we went to like this really cool mansion to like shoot the movie. And I was like the guy with the boom and doing the sound. Wow. And I mixed all that sound as well. So I do a large variety of things.
So you really got like that, just the audio ear. You're kind of jack of
he's
all
a guru.
Trades. What would you say is your greatest strength between the audio engineering, the producing, and the rapping? I know it's probably hard to separate them.
Yeah.
If you could.
I'd say I'm definitely better at like the producing and engineering. If I had to choose between one of those, it would probably be engineering at this point, though I have a lot to learn in both of those areas, mm-hmm. obviously. But that's also where my name comes from, Arcane. Like the actual spelling of it, Arcane, means like mysterious, right. or whatever. So I'm the more like the producer and the engineer, so I'll be like more in the background, and that's sort of where that came from.
I like that.
More mysterious. But yeah, I'd say I'm definitely better and more skilled at producing and engineering and mixing and stuff.
Okay. And let's talk about your latest project, Incentives. How did the title come to be? What's the concept behind the project?
Yeah, I actually went through a lot of different titles for that. I couldn't really decide for a while. And
never easy to pick one.
Yeah, exactly. But Incentives was just sort of like, meaning like, this is my... It wasn't like referring to the tracks exactly, but it was just like, this is my incentive to do what I love and to get into the music industry. And the music was sort of like my incentive. And like, because I produce and engineer everything, like that's all my incentive. And the cover art was actually done by a girl who used to go here to UMass. Her name's Becca, and she's an amazing artist. I'm really glad that she got the cover art done for me. She did a really good job.
Yeah, it's a dope cover.
For sure.
The puzzle pieces in
it.
Yeah. Yeah, it is a dope cover for sure. How do you balance being an artist and a student?
This semester it's been a lot harder because I've been engineering so much. I'll engineer till like 4 in the morning, get back at 6 in the morning.
Jeez.
It's like light out and I'll go to bed and then I'll wake up at like 2. But like it's definitely harder this semester, but it's just... It's about balance and everything. You gotta not do music sometimes when you really want to, or you have to like focus on the music and be like, no, I'm not doing homework right now because I have music to get done. Mm-hmm. Right. Me and Sam K, we like released our projects on the same day, so we were up. I did a full night that night, Thursday night to Friday. I was up with her recording till like 6 a.m.
And did you engineer her whole project?
Yeah, I didn't produce it, but I did engineer it.
Okay.
That was my first time engineering for a singer. And she was like pushing the release of that. She really wanted to get it out because she had some stuff to like get off her chest and stuff. But so I could have done a little better with it if I had more time, but I'm glad we got it out, and I'm glad we worked on it. It was really dope working with her.
Yeah. I feel like all creatives, we're like that with this podcast. And in the past when, you know, we've, you know, had our fun making music, we've had that same experience where we felt like, you know, we rushed it, and we felt like it isn't perfect. But I think that's just kind of the mind of an artist. It's never going to be perfect to you because you created it.
Yeah, I feel that. And I actually, I've been editing Incentives still. I haven't uploaded it to... like Spotify and stuff yet because I've been editing it still, and I added a bunch of stuff to like the In My Way with Sammy. I added like 808, like I've been still mixing in stuff because I didn't have enough time to finish mine really as well.
You're on your Life of Pablo.
Oh! Yeah, exactly.
It's a breathing project.
That's dope. And well, I guess you said you're still working on that, but is there anything else that you're working on at the moment?
Yeah, man, I have a lot of stuff in the works. I'm actually working on... It's a pretty big project. I've put a lot of money into it so far. It's sort of like a collaboration mixtape with a bunch of artists from around the area, mostly Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. I'm producing the whole thing, and I might get a few co-producing tracks on there, but I'm producing the whole thing, and I'm featuring a ton of dope artists from around the area. I know Enlighten's going to be on there, Desmond, who you... goes here.
Yeah, we know Desmond.
He was our first guest on 808.
Really?
Yeah, yeah, he was.
Yeah, I'm going to get him on that project. I'm going to get DJ Lucas. I don't know if you've heard of him before.
I have not.
He's in Dark World. They like started getting bigger back when I was in high school. They're like a local rap group. So it's basically a tape to just emphasize the talent that's in this region and just put everyone on. And I've been putting a lot of money into it, and I'm going to put a lot more into it just to promote it and get it out there.
Awesome.
It's awesome. He's on his Metro. Mike Will.
Exactly.
Right now at the compilation. I love it.
Our last question for you. I've seen that you've been performing at shows. Where's the next place someone can see you perform?
As of now, not quite sure. I did a show last night, actually. That was down in Agawam at... Club One Entertainment Complex, but as of right now, I'm not completely sure. I know that I might be performing with Sammy at the spring concert. Maybe not. We might not have a song together by then, but I know my friend Chris might be. I hope to. There's this festival in the summer called Hellafest that I... his name's DJ Hellebert, and he like throws a festival called Hellafest, and I might be hopping on that. I have to hit him up about that, actually.
Okay.
There's definitely more shows to come, though.
Yeah, definitely.
Absolutely.
So, next show to be determined, but Walt Arcane, look him up on SoundCloud. What's your Instagram?
Walt Arcane Sound is my Instagram. Yeah, I'm everywhere. SoundCloud, Spotify, Apple Music.
Are you on Twitter, too? Or?
Yeah, Twitter. I'm on all that. YouTube. All
right.
Make Search sure my beats. I'm BeatStars.
Yeah. Yo. Hit one of those links. They'll be in the description of the podcast. Thank you for coming on, Walt.
Yeah, thanks a lot, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Of course.
Of course. And we're back. It's time to talk Anderson .Paak. Ventura, his recent album he released, his second album within the last 6 months,
which
is wild. Anytime that happens from an artist, it feels crazy. Like, how'd you put out a 2 full-length projects that soon? But Trevor, you wrote an article about that this week, correct?
I did. Just came out today, yep.
So we're going to talk about it more. You're going to talk about it just because you spent more time on this.
Right.
So my first question for you, what were your initial expectations for Ventura?
So I was expecting really like Oxnard, like 1.5. I was expecting kind of like a spinoff of Oxnard. I was expecting a lot of the same topics where he kind of gets a little bit more political, a little bit more aggressive, a little bit more cocky. You know, a lot of the same instruments that he uses, like I was expecting those flutes, like those really kind of punchy Dr. Dre snares and those beats that he's just known for. So I was expecting more of that, like less of that raw, natural sound that you usually get from Anderson .Paak and more of that like produced, like definitely computer generated sound. So, because I thought that was the direction he was going to be heading in after Oxnard.
And how did the album differ from your expectations?
So right off the bat, it wasn't Oxnard 1.5, but I felt like it was Malibu 1.5.
I definitely hear that.
So I thought it was him trying to get back to that image where he's like, you know, this really chill, like sofa lounge kind of guy. Like these are the kind of tunes you play when you're just chilling, the sun's out, or you're dropping the top on the vet if you own a Corvette. I don't have either a drop top or a Corvette, but regardless, and it is April, but like you'll want to roll the windows down even if it's raining when you're listening to this. So he gives you a lot of those really smooth vibes on this one, but that does create a flaw. I think that does create a major flaw, which we'll get to. So
okay, yeah, I going into this, you know, I'm not as big of an Anderson .Paak fan as you are.
Yeah.
I definitely enjoy his music, but I just never have really done that deep dive to really, you know, have expectations for this one.
Right.
You know, I enjoyed Oxnard. I could see why people, you know, had their issues with it. I thought it was like, I just enjoyed it. I thought it like, I thought it was
too broad.
Yeah,
that was my biggest issue with it.
I feel like he, because what I kept on reading was people thought he punched under his weight. And for me, I guess because I'm not like some diehard Anderson .Paak fan, I was like, I mean, still slaps. He still got the cool voice. What's the issue? You know what I mean? But this project, it's definitely a lot more about love. And
absolutely,
I can definitely feel the whole difference.
Absolutely.
And I overall enjoyed it. When you kick off an album with an Andre 3000 feature, you already got me.
Yeah.
You already got me. And then you close it with
a
Nate Dogg
track.
Feature.
Yeah.
R.I.P. Nate Dogg.
Yeah.
You got me. You got me. But what are your thoughts on the album, Trevor?
So overall, I thought it was a good album. I'll say that. I didn't think it was bad. I didn't think it was anything amazing. But I do feel like he kind of like sold himself a little bit short, where he sticks to one major theme, which is like great. Like you love when you have like that focus in an album. It's like tight. Like it's 11 tracks. Like that's like the best you could ask for nowadays. But I felt like it was just too repetitive. Like I felt like the same formula in Malibu that got him to where he is today. Cause Malibu for me was really his breakthrough project where people started to notice him.
Yeah.
Cause you know, especially I think the Free Nationals, his band, had a lot to do with that too, where a lot of these instruments that they were using, these trumpets, these really nice soft piano keys, just really complimented him very well. And on this, I feel like he's missing that a little bit, but he's doing a lot more of the same. And I think a lot of the tracks here, he just talks about love and heartbreak, but they're not specific. Like, they're not stories.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
That's one thing I was thinking. I noticed that, like, really, you listen to the first 3 tracks in a row.
Yeah.
They're all, you got Come Home featuring Andre 3000, Make It Better featuring Smokey Robinson, Reaching Too Much featuring Lala Hathaway. And all of them kind of touch on the same thing of, you know, trying to mend a broken love, it seems like. And
while that's not necessarily a bad thing, because they're still enjoyable tracks, they still have this like 70s soul vibe going to them. That can only carry an album for so much, depending on what you're looking for. You know, if that's the music you're looking for, you're going to really love it. If you're looking for diversity in his sounds, it's not necessarily there.
Definitely not here. Definitely not on Ventura. I think he like really tries to steer the ship back in the direction of Malibu, because Oxnard for me just took like a hard left turn, like just out of nowhere, like... sonically, conceptually, I thought he just went a lot of different places with that. And for me, this feels like he's trying to right the ship and trying to make songs that appeal to people that liked him in the first place, you know, before Oxnard, you know, before the critics came out with their consensus on Oxnard. So, and I will know what I won't say, like, Come Home, Make It Better, Reaching Too Much. They're not bad songs. It's just that they all do the same thing. They all 100%. Talk about the same thing. And I think he gets into a point in this album where, like, you catch yourself not listening as much because he just gets so repetitive.
Yeah,
I guess
that's funny, because that's definitely one thing I've noticed when listening to this album. I think it's never fully had my attention when I was listening. Even in times where I was laying in my bed, phone not in my bed to make sure I wasn't doing anything, it's just my mind tended to wander, where it's like you kind of check out when you know the subject matter that's coming for each track. But what would you say your favorite tracks on here are?
So I really really like Come Home. Great opener with Andre. His verse is insane. Like, you never on the great thing about Three Stacks is that he never attacks a verse the way you expect him to. Like, he always surprises you with his flow, and I think he does exactly that. Make It Better, like I said, not a bad track. One of my favorites, but still, like, of that same variety.
What's funny is Make It Better is probably my favorite one on this album, and that might just because of it was a single that was released before, so my ears are just more used to it. But I love it. I think that of all the tracks on there, I think it does the best job of making just that, let's make it better. Let's come back and fix this relationship type song.
Yeah, and it unfortunately, like, early on, like, encapsulates, like, the biggest flaw in this album. But moving on from there, Winner's Circle I really like too. Yada Yada grew on me. I thought that that was a little bit too Oxnard-ish for me. Like, I just felt like it wasn't his brand. But it grew on me. I really like how he builds up. I love his delivery on that, too. And then Chosen One. I love Chosen One because that's not just, like, a broad statement on love. He talks about, like, a specific person, like, a specific girl that changed his life, you know, the Chosen One.
Right.
So when he does that, when he, like, gets, like, personal, talks about himself, and, like, actually talks about one particular thing rather than generally addressing love and heartbreak, I think that's where Ventura is at its strongest, and I wish he did that more.
Yeah, so. Chosen One, I love his, like, he's got this kind of, like, choppy staccato, you know, flow on it, where it's I think it's one of the most unique flows in the entire project, where a lot of the other ones, it's his typical melodies that are kind of going on, but that one, it just stuck out to me. Love that one.
Absolutely.
Any tracks you didn't like?
In particular, I don't not like it. I think King James got a little old for me just because it sounds really Oxnard-esque. Like, I just think it didn't grow on me the same way the other tracks do. But, like, I think the back half of this gets a little bit stale. Like, Good Heels, Jet Black, Twilight. Like, those are all the songs that I think embody that big problem where it's just, like, it just sounds samey-samey and he doesn't do anything. But I will say, the outro track with Nate Dogg is dope. What Can We Do is dope.
Oh, fire.
I really like
that track. So. I love how it's almost like honoring Nate Dogg, too.
Yeah.
Where Nate Dogg's vocals seem to be slowly fading away, and I think it's supposed to represent, you know, Nate Dogg passing away, and Anderson .Paak is like, where are you going, Nate Dogg? Where are you going? And I think that's just, it's a beautiful moment.
Absolutely.
From, you know, one R&B hook specialist to another R&B hook specialist. Yeah. I love that.
Right.
Where does Anderson .Paak go from here?
I hope he...
or where do you hope Anderson .Paak goes?
Well, yeah, where does he go
from
here?
We don't know Anderson.
Yeah, I don't know where he's going to go, but, like, I hope that he just, I hope that he peels back and focuses on, like, personal experiences more rather than just, like, broadly addressing things. Because that's what made Malibu so great was, like, you know, you had The Bird, which, like, was all about his come up, like, the beginning of his music career. And then he gets into, like, the lovey tracks a little bit. But Malibu, what was great is because I felt like it was a real peek into his soul, into his personal experiences in life, his hardships. Like, I think it's called The Waters. That song is dope. That song, it's talking about struggles with his family and growing up, too. So I hope he does more of that. Like, I hope he just gets a little bit more focused, a little bit more genuine.
Yeah.
In whatever next project he makes. But obviously, that's much easier for me to say than it is to do.
Unfortunately, I feel like this happens with a lot of artists.
Yeah.
I've talked about it, even with Kendrick Lamar to a certain extent, where I think you become... You put out enough albums, and then your subject matter, you kind of run out of specific stories to tell.
That's
because
true.
Now you're famous and you can't go outside and do anything.
Yeah.
So now you're kind of forced to just make, almost regurgitate what you've made in the past and try and
hope it sticks.
And hope that it's still polished enough that a wide commercial audience still enjoys it.
But
you never know. His next project could be a little more laser focused in terms of storytelling, but... Still, you know, I think Anderson .Paak, his voice is just so special.
Yeah.
That, like, even when he has a project that you don't love...
It's still good.
It's still good.
Yeah, it's still good.
He can't really do any wrong. Just his voice kind of just gives him that advantage.
Yeah, his songcraft is just untouchable. Like, he's just really good at making songs in general. So.
Right.
But that's all I got to say about Ventura. So.
Word. It's time to move on to the ankle break side of things.
Yep.
We'll be talking the playoffs. We're going to keep it pretty simple.
Fast break.
Yeah, we'll no fast break. No need. I'm assuming if you're a basketball fan, you're up to date on who's who and who's winning and all that. We're recording this on Thursday afternoon, so just in case you listen to this
before,
on a Friday.
Before Nets and Sixers game three.
Yeah, some discrepancies, but you know, we're just going to hit a couple playoff points. We both wrote down some questions, so let's do it.
Let's do it.
My first question after watching game two of the Thunder Blazers, it's a heat check question.
It is a heat check question.
Definitely a hot take.
Mm-hmm.
Is Damian Lillard better than Russell Westbrook?
So far in the series, he's been much better than Russell Westbrook. But like
Game two, because game one it wasn't as pronounced.
Dude, that bombs away thing that Lillard did, that was lethal.
I was watching that third quarter, and like that was clearly the biggest play of the game, and that's
that
play is what made me write this question.
Yeah,
where you literally, it's impossible to not juxtapose Westbrook missing a three after getting clamped by Lillard.
Yeah,
and then Lillard coming down two dribbles into
pull
from
up.
Half court, pull up. Wet.
Turns around, bombs
away.
It's
impossible not to juxtapose that moment. But the thing is, that was kind of happening all quarter.
Yeah.
Westbrook shot 5 of 20 that game.
Oh.
And it just, like, it looked like clearly Lillard was the better player.
Yeah,
and you know, obviously he could have got him just that night. But I couldn't help but think, is this a moment that we're going to look at in the all-time perspective and be like, oh, this was the moment where we can see Westbrook's declining and Dame is really entering, like, his ceiling, his prime.
Mm-hmm.
So I personally would say you got to ask the question.
You absolutely have to ask it. And it was a question that was popping all over Twitter. Like,
yeah.
Who's better, Westbrook or Lillard? And I think a lot of people are starting to put Lillard ahead of Westbrook.
Yeah, if you asked me 6 months ago, I would 100% say Westbrook.
Yeah.
Just naturally. And, you know, you can't deny the man averaged a triple-double this year.
Yeah.
But
for the third straight season.
But this might be the third straight season where Westbrook has a first-round exit. So, I don't know, man. Just it's something that's got to be asked. Right now, it's looking like Dame, unless, you know, that changes in their next game.
Right.
But next question that we have here, I think Trevor made this one.
Yeah.
Did we underestimate the Blazers in this series?
I certainly did.
Oh, 100%.
I certainly underestimated the Blazers. I thought since they lost Nurkic, I was like, there's no way they're going to be able to match up Steven Adams. But Enes Kanter's been killing it.
Yeah.
He's been real solid for them. Game one especially, I think he had like 18 and 20.
Yes,
just
he did.
Insane.
He was killing the glass.
But yeah, and Lillard's really stepped up too. Because I mean, the Blazers are notorious, especially after last season, after getting swept by the Pelicans in the first round. They're pretty notorious for their first round exits. But you know, you could say that about Westbrook now too, because he could be heading into his third straight first round playoff exit.
Since KD's left, they haven't made it past the first round.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely underestimated him on Hold My Drink
Sports. Yeah, I picked Thunder in six. So
yeah, if you're listening to this from Hold My Drink Sports, you can literally go over to the article where everyone made, you know, their playoff predictions. I believe I said Thunder in six. That's definitely not happening.
No,
I don't think the Thunder are gonna win four straight. They're really, like, this game.
They're on the ropes.
Yeah, they're really on the ropes, and I don't feel too confident in the Thunder right now.
Yeah.
But who knows? We'll see.
I mean, they're coming back home, so, yeah, like you said, we'll see.
We'll see. The next question is, so, Boogie, DeMarcus Cousins, he suffered a torn quad in game two against the Clippers. How much concern should the Warriors have now that they're missing their starting all-star center for the rest of the playoffs?
I don't think you have to worry the first round, even though they blew a 31-point lead, 3-1 lead. How about that? It's just poetic.
I'm still mad I didn't see that game.
I know, me too. Well, that series and the Bucks-Pistons series, I'm like, I'm not watching that. That's a wash. Yeah. Like, both of those, like, are going to end up with the Warriors or Bucks winning. But I think they should be a little bit concerned. That's one less star. And, like, I don't think they're clicking the same way as they have in other playoff runs. And, I mean, yeah, there was that clip circulating of KD behind Steph. You know, he kind of set his hands in his pockets. Steph always doing that ridiculous three-point shooting. So you never know the chemistry issues with if there's any chemistry issues there. KD looks like he's clearly checked out. He's still going to compete. He's still going to go for that ring, obviously. So you can never count the Warriors out. But I think they should definitely be a little bit concerned going forward.
Yeah.
Especially if they have to play the Rockets next
round. I say the reason that they should be concerned is with the Rockets, I remember when they beat the Rockets with Boogie in the lineup, they ran a lot of high posts through DeMarcus Cousins. He had like 8 assists that game.
Yeah.
And while the Warriors proved they could beat the Rockets last year, they're without DeMarcus Cousins,
3-0, or the Rockets are 3-0, right?
Yeah, against the Warriors? I believe so. Yeah. And it's also just the fact that without DeMarcus Cousins, now you're kind of scrambling for who's your real center.
Yeah, Bogut?
Probably not Bogut. Who's the other guy?
Looney?
Is Bell? Is Bell not a center?
He is, but he's really not like a primary option. Yeah.
By us just having this conversation right here,
what do they do?
When you plug in at center, you can say, yeah, you got your small ball lineup, but you can't play that for a full game.
No.
So it'll be interesting to see how that affects them. At the end of the day, I think they still got to be the title favorites.
Yeah.
My next question is Patrick Beverley the best defender on the planet? He talked about in his post-game interview, he said he's trying to be the best player on the planet.
Yeah.
So
is he?
Kevin Durant?
I mean, he gave KD a lot of trouble.
9 turnovers. Yeah, or is it 8 turnovers? Whatever. A lot of turnovers.
Yeah, he gave him a lot of trouble. He's given him a lot of trouble so far, and he gives everybody a lot of trouble. I remember, like, Lonzo's debut. Right, they played the Clippers in his debut. No, that turned from the Lonzo show into the Patrick Beverley show quickly.
Lonzo.
And, like, yeah, that's rookie Lonzo ball. But still, Patrick Beverley has this mentality that I don't think a lot of people in the league possess.
Oh, yeah. I don't know if he's the best defender on the planet, but I don't think there's anybody in the NBA that takes defense as seriously as Patrick Beverley.
Yeah, not absolutely Kawhi Leonard, agree with that.
Not Paul George, who they have, you know, bigger bodies, so they can obviously do different things on defense. But they just don't have the same mentality where they go into every game thinking, like, every defensive possession is a war.
Yeah, like, that's his trademark, so.
The way that I'm just watching him clamp KD, obviously he's getting help, but it's impressive to me. And we saw this with Tony Allen like 3 years ago or 4 years ago in the Memphis OKC series where like sometimes if you get a guard on KD that's really just trying to pressure the ball like that, it can give him fits.
Yeah.
So it's at least interesting to watch.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know I can't say he's the best defender on the planet, but I can, as I said before, no one takes defense seriously as Patrick Beverley.
That's a point I absolutely agree with.
Next question. Which series is most likely to end in a fist fight?
Oh, wow. That's a great question. Because I feel like I haven't really seen a whole lot of games where the tempers have flared, but I guess, like, Blazers-Thunder, there's a lot of tension there, specifically between Russ and Dame.
Yeah.
But Westbrook's a little bit of a I will say. Because I feel like whenever he's approached with the smoke, he runs away, or he flops, or he does something. Like, I feel like he's all talk. He never acts on that. So I don't know. I don't think that could end in a fist fight.
I think this one, for me, it's easy at least. It's Sixers-Nets.
That would be hilarious.
Joel Embiid, game two, was throwing bows. Now we got Ben Simmons and Jared Dudley. They're chirping into the media.
Yeah.
Jared Dudley said that Ben Simmons is great in transition.
Average player,
in the half court, which is factual information.
Yeah.
But the fact that another player would say that about
especially Jared Dudley.
Jared Dudley, an NBA vet, is really he's really going to say that on record. But at the same time, I think Ben Simmons, he responded, he said, oh, that's coming from Jared Dudley. Jared Dudley gave him an ill, like, jab step crossover that, like, low key shifted Simmons out of his shoes in their last game. So I'm just interested to see how this, what the series turns into in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
Right now, I'd say this is that's the most unpredictable series right now. Just because, you know, I didn't expect the Nets to win game one, and then game two, I didn't think the Sixers were gonna,
I didn't think they would show up the way that they did.
So I really, I'm interested to see if Brooklyn takes advantage of being at home tonight, or if they end up, you know, or if the Sixers they fall back on the fact that they have the most talent in this series, even if their pieces don't fit. If they feel, if they can find a way to really, you know, get the best out of everybody like they did in game two.
Right.
So we'll see. Next question. We already did the Nets, whatever. Yeah. So is the Bucks, actually, no. We have a question. I'll read this question, but I'm going to read my question. Is the Bucks Piston series enough evidence that the Bucks could go all the way? What do you think, Trevor?
No.
Okay. Well, my question was, has anyone actually watched the Bucks Piston series? Because I'm not going to sit here and lie. I've not watched more than 2 minutes of that series.
Yeah, no. I mean, I only watched it last night in the first, for the second half when Giannis scored, like, 9 points in like 2 minutes. I think it was ridiculous. He just came out firing right away. So, like, I think that's not even a question at this point, who's going to win that series. But the real test, I guess, is the Celtics. If they, if the Celtics beat the Pacers, which I think they will. But I think that'll be a real test for them, and maybe even the Raptors, if the Raptors can make it into that, into the Eastern Conference Finals. Because the Bucks, they have the most wins in the NBA, but I guess I'm just not convinced yet. I don't really know what it is. I'm just not completely convinced.
I'm convinced in the fact that they just had one of the greatest point differentials of all time in the regular season.
Yeah.
And that just means something in the playoffs.
Yeah.
The 96 Bulls, they had the highest one before the Bucks team. So that means something in its own right.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I'm not going to sit here and pretend I watched this series, because I'm not going to watch it. Blake Griffin is out for the whole series. Literally the only thing to watch this for is Giannis going to do something ridiculous, like dunking from the free throw line?
Yeah.
But I'll leave it to Twitter to keep me highlighted
game,
on that.
Yeah, because the first game, they won by, like, 35 or something, 38, whatever. Like, they were up 40, like, the whole game.
Yeah.
They almost got there last night. They were up by 20 for most of the second half, so.
There should be, like, this new rule where, like, if there's an 8 and a 9 seed and it's like, yes, this team has the better record, but nobody wants to see them in the playoffs, like, there should be a petition where you can get the 8 seed in. Because I would have, or the 9 seed in, because I would have much rather seen, you know, D Wade in his last run in the playoffs right now.
Yeah, whether they got smacked around or not. But.
Are you proposing, like, a wild card fan vote?
I don't know what I'm proposing. I'm just trying to figure out a way to make sure D Wade makes the playoffs
last year. Let's get Adam Silver on the pod.
The Blake Griffin-less Pistons. Like, this rule could have been a one-time only thing, but like this first round, in terms of revenue, they probably could have made so much more money if D Wade was in the first round.
Mm-hmm.
No one wants to watch this series, like, besides Bucks fans and diehard fans. Like, I'm not acting like this is not
Pistons
an NBA
fans
game,
aren't even watching
this. It's still
this.
NBA basketball, but it's like, what are you? What is there to really tune in for besides
Giannis?
What is Giannis going to do that's crazy?
Yeah.
That's really about it.
Right.
But we're on to my last question. Does the Spurs-Nuggets series go 7 games?
Yeah, I think absolutely. I think that is probably the tightest contested series of all of these.
Yeah.
Spurs-Nuggets. It's a real test for the Nuggets, because the Spurs, veteran playoff team.
Yeah, the Spurs never go out easy.
Yeah, never.
That's the thing. Yeah, I think this goes 7 games too. I just think it's interesting because the Spurs, they could literally go pull up to the playoffs and they could have lost 20 straight and it's still the Spurs. Like,
yeah.
They're not going to go out easy. They're not going to hurt themselves in the playoffs. They're going to play you the right way, and you got to beat them. You got to beat the man, you know.
They have
the championships for a reason. So, we'll see on that. But I think that concludes our basketball talk.
Yeah. I got all nothing else to add.
Make sure you give us a follow on Instagram and Twitter, 808s_abreaks, jkerman98 on both.
I'm Trevor Wilson, OG on both.
Special thanks to Walt Arcane for hopping on this podcast. Special thanks to Hold My Drink Sports, Amherst Wire. Make sure you're checking out both those sites.
Tons of content, y'all.
Yes, sir.
Tons of content.
I guess we should... I'm going to put this little advertisement in. Look out for our Marvel rankings article.
Yeah.
We're ranking all 21 of the Marvel MCU movies. We're doing the entire entertainment section hands-on. We got like 6 writers
six.
On that.
Yep.
So be on the lookout for that. Articles every day up until Endgame.
Yep.
Peace.